The Huddle, powered by Reuben James, Main Street in Burlington. Find them online at rjsburlington.com. Now, here's The Huddle, live on 101.3 ESPN, 101.3 ESPN.com, and streaming worldwide on the 101.3 ESPN app.
Everybody, you're in the huddle right here, 101.3 ESPN, and we all unaccounted for. Brady's here, Rich is here, Arnie's here in Los Angeles. How you doing, handsome? What's going on, big boy?
You sound like you're 2 inches away from me.
You weren't even on, Rich.
Well, I'm not going to blame that one on Arnie as much as I'd like to. I'm fine, but you sound like you're 5 feet away. You sound like you're sitting next to me. That's pretty incredible.
In case people want to know, I came out to Los Angeles for a couple of weeks just to be by my mom, who's not feeling well. Just wanted to see her, see my brother. Been a couple of years since I've been to L.A. And, of course, the first thing I do when I land in L.A., right to In-N-Out Burger. So I that's my first stop to In-N-Out Burger. I mean, it was either that, Chick-fil-A, Cheesecake Factory. I couldn't make up my mind, guys. So I decided to go as closest. But I got to tell you this. It took me 42 minutes to go about 4.5 miles in Los Angeles.
It's not bad.
It's horrible.
Arnie, I think you made the wrong food choice. Well, I take that back. You made the right food choice in the end, but all of your options were – I'm not happy with your decision-making. In-N-Out Burger is great, and it's a California West Coast staple.
Yes.
So you made the right choice in going there. But Cheesecake Factory you can get in a lot of different places.
That's true.
But not here.
But you could get Cheesecake Factory in Albany, and I'm sure even closer than that. You don't need Cheesecake Factory out west. You need El Pollo Loco, Del Taco, and Carl's Jr. next.
Oh, you're talking about and all those places are fine, but I mean they're not an In-N-Out Burger. They're not like a Cheesecake Factory. Rich, you love Cheesecake Factory. You love that place, man.
That menu is, to say the least, pretty eye-popping, not to mention belt-popping.
You can get it anywhere.
But not here.
Not here,
that matters.
Though. Yeah, I mean, I starve. If there was Cheesecake Factory in Burlington, you'd never see me.
Right.
I do the show permanently from there.
I agree.
It'd be disgusting. I got to tell you, the one thing I do enjoy, though, about the West Coast. I mean, the traffic here, look, all jokes aside, it's unbearable. You can't get anywhere. You can't get anything done in this town. Your office is in your car. The phone's ringing. People are talking. People have computers there. People are shaving. I'm waiting for them to put a shower inside the passenger seat or something like that. That could be the next idea. Don't steal that from me. So, but the West Coast time zone, with the game starting at 4 and then, you know, ending at like 6:30 and then 7 to 10, it's just a thing of beauty. I got to be honest with you guys. I could stay up. I'm not tired. I'm watching the games. It's a thing of beauty to watch the games on the West Coast.
Yeah, but do you really want to – are you so anxious to go to bed at 7:30? I mean, to me, it's perfect for me because you talk about sports all day. Then I get home at 7 o'clock. I turn on my TV, and there it is.
Rich, if you know Arnie like I know Arnie, you know that when the game ends, then the night has just started. This allows you to watch. Look at it this way. You're done with Bruins game 7 by 6 o'clock East Coast time, and then he's out finding a sorority party at UCLA.
Okay. Yeah. Wait a minute. You think everybody thinks I'm full of baloney. Why don't you tell everybody what happened on Tuesday at trivia night, Brady? Why don't you tell everybody? Because I didn't get a chance to tell the story. I'm sure you didn't. Why don't you tell real quick what happened Tuesday night, Rich?
Yeah.
Listen to this.
We were at trivia night at the Burger Bar, and we had a great – I told Rich this, and he goes, great. He's going to be insufferable forever.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't quite know how this happened, but somehow a woman far younger than you –
yes.
Left a phone number for you?
A group of 5, 6, 7 women.
They did not all leave their numbers, though.
No, but I'm sure one number all is the same for everybody.
Was it a fake number, you think?
No, absolutely not. No, absolutely not.
Well, why don't you give me that number and I'll test it out?
You know, of course I'm going to have to give it to you. I'm married, but tell everybody what happened. Brady, go ahead.
Yeah, they gave you the phone number, and then you came over to me, and you go, my wife took it from me.
Yeah, my wife's like, what's the phone number for? girls? And they were kind of giggling. I go, well, they're probably for me because I'm usually collecting the answers on trivia. That's what it was for. You see, Rich, I still got it. I'm looking, my skin's silky smooth. I'm still looking good. Ever since I've done the beard oil, my shave looks even better. I'm looking good out here. I'm sitting right now. I sent you guys a picture of where my studio is overlooking the city of L.A. You should put that on Facebook. Beautiful sunshine. I got my shirt off. I got my European Speedo on, and I'm just relaxing doing the show today.
Until you said that, because my whole family's from Southern California, I sent my mom the picture of where you are, and she said beautiful, great area, so she was happy to hear that. And also, Arnie, somehow there had to have been some kind of like someone had to have lost a bet, and I think that phone number might have been the phone number for the burger bar itself.
I know it's eating you up alive. I understand that all the single men out there that are starving the fine women, but
I'd hate to burst your bubble, Arnie, but that is the number of the burger bar, I think.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I'll give it to you, Rich, and there you go. But, okay, busy show. This is what I live for. I live for days like this. I can't believe all the rumors going on, Brady. Tell everybody what we got coming up going on today.
Well, remember, you can always get in 802-655-6672. You can do that on the Town Fair Tire text line. And we do have a bunch of texts coming in, so we'll read those, including from your wife, who says, Brady, Arnie has 2 weeks out there. He'll come back 20 pounds heavier because of all the fast food choices.
Yes.
but as for what's coming up today, remember, mistake of the day. Rich and I didn't make any mistakes yesterday, Arnie, so nobody was our qualifier yesterday.
Wow.
How about that?
Embroidery works at Joann's Uniforms in Colchester. If you want that mistake, if you want to text in a mistake of the day, you can win that brand new baseball cap. And remember, they help small businesses with screen printing, embroidery, and vehicle lettering to get it right the first time. As for what's coming up today, we will examine the NFL draft from both the Giants and the Patriots perspectives. We'll get you ready for Celtics-Bucks Game 6. Two great guests. We'll talk about Lamar Jackson, who's rumored with the Patriots. But first, Arnie, I know you were traveling, but I know you were settled in for this. Rich was angry texting me most of the night, but the Bruins did win Game 7 yesterday.
Wow.
I got to tell you, I don't want to take away, first of all, from what Toronto did. Hats off to them. Great. They could have folded over, rolled over, died down 3-1, especially the way they lost their series, 5-6 years ago, whatever it was, to the Bruins that time. And it's a young team. It was gutsy to think that they were one period away from perhaps upsetting the Bruins and one of the worst series for the Bruins loss I've ever seen in my life. But also give the Bruins a lot of credit. One period away from collapsing and, down 1-0, down 2-1, even taking a 3-2 lead and getting down 4-3 and then coming up with the tying goal. They fought the whole game to just, they never gave up. They never said, oh my goodness, this could be the end. What a great game that was. What a great game number 7. It had everything. It had the drama. It had lead changes. Rich, I can only imagine you were on the edge of your seat. It was a lot of fun. I enjoyed the game thoroughly. Hats off to both teams for a great game 7.
I could have smoked 25 packages of cigarettes last night and had a healthier night than I did emotionally, mentally, physically. It was it was an absolute, root canal. Yeah. It was it was such an emotional roller coaster, and I was in a place, the poorhouse where I usually am, that was just filled with Bruins fans. A lot of people who never go out to that based on the way they were, they never go out. Period. Yeah. But they're all in there in their black and gold. And everybody in the place, it was just up and down and back and forth. And, Patrice Bergeron gets that goal right at the end of the first period. The place goes nuts. Everybody's happy between the first and second. And then that ridiculous first 6 minutes of the second period, including that unassisted breakaway shorthanded goal by Tappan.
Well, that's just an inexcusable mistake by Marchand. He whiffs on the puck and then falls down and then gets beaten to the puck. That was 3 strikes and you're out there for Marchand.
And the goal was just embarrassing.
That was a great deke by Tappan.
It was, but Tuukka, just talk about, talk about just being completely burned. It was ridiculous. So everybody... Really? You thought Tuukka looked good on that play?
I thought that was a great offensive move.
It was, but all right, so are you going to say Tuukka had a good game? Let's go further with this.
No, I will not say he had a good game. I'm not going to put the turnover by Marchand, who whiffs on the puck and then whiffs on getting to the puck twice. I'm not putting that on Tuukka.
he made Tuukka look ridiculous with a great move. Can we compromise with that statement?
But great moves will generally do that to great goaltenders.
And that's a guy who in the world is Kasperi Kapanen? I'm like, what? I know a few Kapanens at hockey, but so then the whole place, you know, the air just comes right out of the place. And I'm sure this was the way it was everywhere with fans of the Bruins. And it's like, oh my God, this is really going to happen. We're going to blow this lead. Geez. And then they come out in that third period, and it was like a completely different team.
I mean, it was a historic win. I mean, Arnie, the Bruins became the first team in NHL history yesterday to overcome three deficits of at least one goal to win a Game 7 in regulation. Again, first team NHL history to overcome three deficits of at least one goal to win a Game 7 in regulation. I mean, seven goals were the most that the Bruins have ever scored in a Game 7. I know one of them was the empty netter at the end by Marchand, but that third period, you talk about the energy and the determination, especially by Jake DeBrusque, that was the key yesterday.
Did I hear the stat right? When the game was tied at four, they said a team has never lost a Game 7 by scoring five or more goals. And I'm saying, okay, next goal wins then. That's what it's going to come down for. And by the way, if you're on the Town Fair Tire text line, shame on you. A Game 7, we should get them like we're giving away $100 bills today at 802-655-6672. What you thought about the game? Is it going to take too much of the next round? And I guess that's the next question also. I mean, you want to enjoy this. They pick it back up in a couple of days. Is this going seven games going to cost them in the next round or cost them if they're lucky to get by the next round after that because they're going to be too tired? I don't know. You don't have time to enjoy something like this, guys.
Yeah, I have spent a lot of time in my life worrying about the rest versus rust factor and things like that. And now I'm just not as interested in it. I used to think, Arnie, that losing in the first round of your conference tournament was not a bad thing because you weren't playing long and you weren't playing very long. You got to rest before the NCAA tournament. And that was kind of proven to not be a benefit. So I'm just going to enjoy this. The Bruins themselves might not be able to enjoy it with all the recovery and the travel and getting to Tampa. But as a fan, I'm not going to worry about that.
And I'll sorry, Arnie. I was just going to say, I'll tell you what, the road to the Stanley Cup for the Bruins is, I mean, it's just, this is brutal. Toronto's going to seem like the easiest series of all if they can get in, you know, if the Bruins continue to move forward. They get the number one seed in the second round. Then they get either Washington or Pittsburgh if they somehow get past Tampa. They haven't beaten Washington in 105 years. Pittsburgh is not going to go away. They're the two-time defending Stanley Cup champions and just loaded for bear right now. So it's going to be a tough road. It certainly doesn't get any easier with Tampa.
I got to say, watching the game yesterday, watching what the crowd is like in Vegas for their games, just watching some of the crowds in hockey, I'm like, oh, my. Nashville, too, was it gets crazy. So much better than, I don't know, when you go to a game, Rich, you find yourself getting crazier for when you're with the Bruins or if you're in a Celtics game. I got to think, it just seems like a Bruins game is a hell of a lot more fun than going to the Celtics game.
Well, I mean, for me, it's two different worlds because, I mean, the last two NHL games I went to were in Glendale, Arizona, and there was 5,000 people there who couldn't have cared less. But, yeah, growing up going to the old Montreal Forum and a lot of games at the old Boston Garden, it's crazy. The worst thing that can happen is for your team to get down two or three goals immediately, and the whole place just evaporates as far as the excitement goes. But when you have a game last night where it's such a roller coaster, the roof comes off.
I also think
– I was going to say, I'm sorry, but did you see the first goal when Toronto got the first goal? Did you see somebody mouth like, what the blag or something like that? Did I see that? I'm sure there was a lot of people saying that.
Well, and the penalty 30 seconds in creating a power play. It's like, are you kidding me?
I tell you, they're lucky they won because I was ready to just flip out on my television when Rick Nash got the cross-checking penalty in the third. Because the Bruins were going to go on the power play, and then Nash goes in and cross-checks him and gets it to 4-on-4. And again, they ended up winning, so fine, but they lost a chance at a power play there. And I think at that time they were still down 4-3, or maybe they had tied it 4-4, but that was just a terrible penalty.
Yeah, it was 4-4 at the time because Krug had just scored.
Yes, Krug had just scored.
If you would have told me that, didn't at one point Tuukka gave up four goals on 16 shots, I believe it was. If you would have told me that was going to happen the day before, I said, well, let's wrap it up and start talking golf because their season's done. You might as well start picking other NHL teams because the Bruins are just going to go ahead and get eliminated after being up 3-1. He was not good, but he was good late. I guess that's all that really counts, guys.
It's funny because when we were at UPS yesterday doing the show, you know, Brady asked me, so what do you think about tonight? And one of the few times in my life I was just like, I have no bleeping idea. I mean, it was almost impossible to figure out what was going to happen in that game as far as a prediction went. Yeah. And sure enough, that's exactly how it played out.
Arnie, we were talking about this a lot yesterday and just wanted your take on it. Who did you think going into Game 7 was under more pressure yesterday?
On the Bruins?
No, just the Bruins and the Maple Leafs going into yesterday's Game 7. Who was under more pressure?
Easily the Bruins. I mean, they were up 3-1. They were the better team during the season. They let 2 games slip away like that, especially Game 6. And Toronto having to win 2 games on the road. Oh, no, absolutely. Why? Was there any doubt that it was the Bruins that had more pressure on this one than Toronto?
I think it depends on how you look at it. I said it was Toronto, but I think in the micro of the argument, it was the Bruins because of all the things you just said. But macro, you talk about a Maple Leafs team that hasn't won a playoff series since 2004 and has all these young kids that have a lot of talent but are going to be coming into contract years this year and next year. You might not be able to keep this young, great core together forever. I thought the weight of the entire country of Canada, I know Winnipeg is in the playoffs too, but you've got the weight of the country on your shoulders. I thought it was Toronto long term.
Well, we've seen that before with Montreal, but I was going to say their future looks real bright. They kind of are going to be the young and upcoming team for the next couple of years. If I'm a Leafs fan, I'm excited. You could build off coming back down 3-1 and not rolling over. And if you had lost this in 5 and lost 4-1, I bet you there would have been a lot of criticism. And then everything you just said, I would have totally agreed with. But no, not in this. I think they've, again, there's no moral victories when you lose a best of 7. But they have a lot to be proud of. That was a great series there.
And how exhausted is Toronto's sports base after last night?
Yesterday was the 6th time in history that the Blue Jays, Raptors, Maple Leafs, and Toronto FC all played on the same day. Hey, Arnie, it's NFL draft day. No, you're out in Los Angeles. You're pumped. What are your Giants going to do? There's a lot of rumors about them. Let's talk about that next.
We'll get to that next. I'll say it. I'm here in L.A. Next on 101.3 ESPN. Go.
The Huddle with Rich, Arnie, and Brady. It's really sort of an addiction. 101.3 ESPN.
All right, welcome back. You're in the huddle right here at 101.3 ESPN. A beautiful 82 degrees, I think, out here in Southern California. What's it like there in Burlington, Vermont, guys?
It's 54, but let's stop and hear the good part.
I really dig those styles they wear.
Do you like us playing California music for you?
I do. I enjoy that. Thank you very much. I got to tell you, you know what's so funny is my buddy was driving me around yesterday, and he's like, look, there's only 2 things in California, in Los Angeles. You know what it is. It's the weather and the girls. They're just both fantastic. I'm like, okay, so I can't argue with you much there.
How about traffic maybe added onto that, as you found out? So
yeah. I got to tell you, there's so much road rage here. You get road rage just by being in the front seat. You're not even driving. It's bad. It's bad for your health. I never thought I would say this. I really thought I would miss the West Coast, Los Angeles, Arizona. You can't live like this. This is not normal. You can't live with traffic like this, guys.
Is the traffic worth all of the payoffs, like the weather?
No, because you also have to rent a place for like $3,000 a month for a 2-bedroom apartment.
Sounds like Burlington.
Yeah. Yes. Good luck on that one.
I think it's a lot different than Burlington. Hey, yeah. Arnie, NFL draft tonight.
Oh, yes.
And I am so – my head is spinning from all of the things that might be happening. Josh Allen's old tweets, Baker Mayfield might be number one now. Who knows? Let's look at the Giants first.
Can I just say – I know you want to get to – I just want to say one thing about Josh Allen's old tweets. Not that I think that's appropriate behavior, but I think whoever leaked that out – is just a shameful person because I know if we got it, if somebody from the media got it and they put it out there, okay, I understand that, but there's no doubt in my mind that somebody put it out there to hurt him. So maybe their client or quarterback client gets a better spot, or that maybe somebody had a vendetta against them like they did with the guy who was smoking pot that the Dolphins took in the draft.
Yeah, Laremy Tunsil.
Yeah, Tunsil. I think it's horrible that somebody would hold on to information like this and then throw it out there to purposely hurt somebody. I think that's just terrible, guys.
Yeah,
I don't know what you think.
And I think, obviously, exhibiting racist behavior at a young age is never a good look. But from what I had heard, a lot of what he was saying on Twitter years ago were song lyrics. And
right.
Now, yes, in hindsight, you shouldn't put language like that on social media. But in a lot of times, those are lyrics. They don't reflect your actual opinion. You are just reciting someone else's lyrics. And we've seen a number of people fall into that kind of trap now. And I think you're running down a very slippery slope when you do that.
A little nerve-wracking, but when I heard about that, I was pretty upset. But you know what? I will see how far the kid falls. As for the Giants, look, if I'm going to be wrong, I'm going to be wrong. I always said that Sam Darnold was going to be number one, Josh Rosen was going to be number two. I've heard the rumors. I've seen the reports now that Baker Mayfield could be the possible number one. I'm going to stand by logic in this situation. Look, I'm not the NFL draft expert, but if Baker Mayfield is taken with the number one pick overall, I've said this about the Giants. You either got to take a Sam Darnold or Josh Rosen. If you don't want to take the quarterback of the future, you have to trade down. And I know that Gettleman's never made a trade when it comes to draft, but in this situation, you can get a king's ransom. And I'm going to, again, play by logic here. If I could tell you that the most logical team to trade up were either New England or Buffalo, and more likely Buffalo, and they said, take our two first-round picks, take one of our second-round picks, or maybe both our second-round picks, and maybe a third-round pick or a pick next year. Hey, where do I sign off on that? Are you kidding me? If the Giants are going to take the quarterback of their future, too many people want and need that second pick to take a Darnold, to take a Rosen, and I thought it was going to be for a Baker Mayfield. That pick is even more valuable if Baker Mayfield's the number one overall, guys.
Yeah, and the thing is the Giants are obviously in a great spot here because picking at number two, you've got Rosen, you've got Darnold, you've got Allen, you've got Mayfield. Three of them, most likely, if not all four of them, one of them's going to – they're all going to be available. So if you've already done your homework, which they obviously have, you're going to get one of those guys. But the billion-dollar question here, as we've said all along, is what is Eli Manning right now? I don't know what next year's quarterback crop looks like. It can't possibly be as strong as this one is. And I'm sort of changing my tune a little bit on what the Giants should do. And I'm thinking if there is not somebody that they foresee as a franchise quarterback coming down the draft pipeline in the next couple of years, maybe they should pounce on a guy to replace Eli here.
I have said the same thing for the better part of the last month, and it holds true even up until the last hours leading up until the draft. The Giants, if they're not – I want them to take Darnold. If Darnold's available at two, you have to take Darnold.
And I agree.
I can rationalize taking a quarterback. I can rationalize trading out and getting more picks. The one thing I cannot rationalize is taking Saquon Barkley.
Number one,
you can get running backs later in the draft. And number two, this Giants team is a ways away from competing. Let's put Saquon Barkley at the extreme high end of the running back longevity market, Rich. And let's say he's got eight good years in him. Mm-hmm. And I think that's high. We know the answer is closer to five, but let's say he's got eight. 2 to 3 of those years are rebuilding, so you're going to waste some of his prime and then get him for 3 to 5 maybe pretty good years. I'd rather take a quarterback who I can keep for a decade to 12 years, and I'm going to have a lot longer window open. This team's not going to compete right away in the Saquon Barkley window. It's just not going to happen.
Brady, I agree with you on this one. And like I said, if you don't take the quarterback of the future, and I don't think Eli Manning has much. Matter of fact, if it wasn't Eli Manning and it was any other quarterback with any other name that you didn't respect as much or wasn't like the godfather of football or something, he'd be out there last year and he would have been given a goodbye tour, a rocking chair, a 4x4 truck, and you would have sent him on his way and thank you very much, and everybody would have waved goodbye and we all would have had tears in our eyes, and that pretty much would have wrapped that up. But because he's Eli Manning, he gets to call his all way out. Look, it's not all his fault. Do I think he's got a little bit left in the tank? Yeah, but not enough to take you all the way to the Super Bowl. You better take Sam Darnold if he's there, but if you're not going to take him, trade down, get the king's ransom, rebuild your team. But forever, let this be known, though. Let it be known, if you're a Giants fan, forever and ever. From here on out, for the next 20 years, you will be known as the team that passed on Rosen and Darnold and Allen, and we'll be talking about the quarterbacks from this for a long time out, whether they're going to be flops or great. You're the ones that passing on all these. You could be passing on a Brett Favre. It will always be remembered like that, Rich.
Arnie, I'm going to jump in. Yeah. I don't think that Dave Gettleman plays ball this way, and I don't think that the Giants organization in Gettleman's first year are going to meddle too much in his very first draft. But I've been wondering this. With the New York Jets, one, the Jets are picking a quarterback. Whether it's Rosen, Darnold, Mayfield, or Allen, they're picking a quarterback, and they're picking at three. Because of the way the New York market works, do you think the Giants need to take Barkley, or they think they need to take Barkley because they need a home run pick to counter the Jets, one, picking right behind them, and two, getting a home run quarterback?
I hope that's not the that's not what you do for
me
drafting.
Me too. I hope not either.
It's for the back pages out there. And look, I like Barkley. On any other normal year, you probably would take him with that second pick. Ezekiel Elliott was taken with the fourth pick, but this is not a normal year. You have quarterback heavy, four of them, maybe even five of them, if you throw in Lamar Jackson into the mix, or more than that, that people think that could be franchise-changing quarterbacks out there. Plus, you also have the perfect storm of running backs that you could take in the fourth, fifth, sixth round. It's a deep, between a deep quarterback and a deep running back, you can't allow Barkley to go number two. If you let him slip through your fingers, that's not going to be a big deal. But you can't let the quarterback of your dreams slip through your fingers without getting a king's ransom. And like I said, so many people are going to want that pick. Maybe Arizona, maybe the Bills. I'm not sure the Patriots have the guts to do that. But that's the three off the top of my head, guys.
I would imagine Giants fans will turn into an angry mob tonight if Gettleman and the crew decide to trade down, though. It's just not a sexy thing to do, no question about it.
But it's a smart thing to do.
It is, but at the same time, if you've got one, if you're guaranteed, and they are, at least three choices out of those four top quarterbacks, if not all four, as I said before. I mean, as Gettleman said today, or yesterday, he says this is either going to be a five-year mistake or a 15-year, you know, complete change of the franchise. Yeah. And it's a rare opportunity, too, because let's keep in mind that when are the Giants ever going to be 3-13 again, really? I mean, they're clearly rebuilding, and that's where the question becomes, do you trade down and make the rebuild happen faster?
Arnie, I was talking with somebody today. What do you think about this? Imagine these scenarios. Just hypothetically, the Giants could get Darnold at 2 and Sony Michel, the running back from Georgia, with the first, you know, the second pick of the second round,
right?
Or they could get Barkley and like a Mason Rudolph. I mean, both of those do sound okay, though. And as I'm against Barkley, when you pair it with the first, you know, the second pick of the second round, you can do a lot of things there that are good.
You don't buy a Porsche and then put in the cheap gas. You don't buy a Porsche and then get the cheap paint job. You know what I mean? You don't go ahead and cover it up like that. If you're gonna, and that's what you're doing with the quarterback situation, I guess is what I'm saying. If you're gonna go big, you go big with the quarterback and you chintz on the running back. You don't go cheap on the quarterback and go big on the running back. You go the other way around, I think.
Now you're in SoCal, so how many Porsches have you seen so far since you landed?
Oh, it's disgusting. Yeah. Everybody has, seriously, everybody has a $50,000 car. The unemployed have a $50,000 car. I don't know how you can afford that. It's amazing. People unemployed have $50,000 cars, nice phones. It's amazing. I never knew that so many people work outside the office, because obviously nobody works in the office because they're all driving around out there. It's remarkable.
Hey, Town Fair Tire text line 802-655-6672. Big Mike at McGillicuddy's. You guys are wrong about Barkley. He's better than Ezekiel Elliott was when he was drafted. Instant playmaker. Not like I care, though. Hashtag fly, Eagles, you know, fly.
Yeah, he may be right about that, but if you could get the quarterback of your dreams or get a whole bunch of draft picks by trading Barkley and still get a running back, maybe, let's say if Barkley is a 10, but you can get a 8-plus or a 9 in the third round, well, that's what you've got to do then.
Yes, I totally agree. Drafting a running back is the one thing that I can't justify for the Giants. Arnie, We're going to have to go to break because in this Patriots draft, you know they've been linked to a quarterback and they've been linked to Lamar Jackson. Well, the voice of the Louisville Cardinals who called Lamar Jackson's games, Paul Rogers, he's coming around on the other side.
And I wouldn't even get a chance to mention the Celtics with a big game tonight. I know obviously you're going to get into that, but wow, 3-2 and man, I thought they were going to go ahead and one slip through their fingers and they pulled away. So I know you'll get into that later. But as you said, Paul Rogers, the voice of Louisville, he's coming up next right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Go Lake and win. Back to the huddle where you can give us your take at 802-655-6672. Providing Arnie shuts up long enough to let you get a sentence in. 101.3 ESPN.
Greetings, loved ones. Let's take a journey.
Welcome back. You're in the huddle right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. It is finally here. Months and months of speculation. We've had speculation all morning, all afternoon until this point. Draft day is tonight. Patriots have two picks, 23 and 31 in the first round. They've been linked to quarterback Lamar Jackson out of Louisville. Let's go out to the TikTok Jewelers guest line and find ourselves the voice of Louisville football. It is Paul Rogers. Paul, how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm looking forward to see where Lamar winds up. He's a special talent, and I really got a kick out of watching him play here the past few years.
Well, he won the Heisman Trophy, and let's start with this. You called all his games. What makes him so good?
I would have to say his elusiveness and his escapability. And unfortunately, in a way, that's come back to haunt him because I think he's being pigeonholed as a running quarterback, and his unique ability with his feet, I think, has overshadowed how good a thrower he is. He does have a strong arm, a great knowledge of the game, but certainly what separates him from everybody else is his unique ability to shake loose on the run.
The thing that I have wondered about Lamar Jackson is instinctually, does he run out of necessity, or is it, okay, my first read's not there, and now my instincts come in and I take off? Because they've tried to coach that out of Cam Newton, and it hasn't really worked. Can you coach that out of Lamar Jackson?
I don't think you can completely coach it out of him because that's something that you want him to have. But he definitely got better each year at not running quite so quickly. It used to be he'd take the snap and run. Then it got to be he'd take the snap, take a quick look, and run. And by his senior year, he got to where he would stand more patiently in the pocket. Now, sometimes his protection wasn't real good, and he was running out of necessity. But I think he can get to the point as a pro quarterback where he'll throw first, that's what you've got to do, but then still have that deadly ability to escape when things break down.
The knock that we've seen on some of the quarterbacks in this draft, not just Lamar Jackson, but also Josh Allen, is the completion percentage. Lamar Jackson was at 57% for his career, if I'm not mistaken. Is that low number because, hey, drop passes? Is it because inaccuracy? Is it bad weather? What can we attribute some of those numbers to?
Yeah, I would have to admit that accuracy was his biggest problem, although not so much on the throws you might think. I think where Lamar needs the most work is the touch passes, the quick throws out of the backfield. His downfield accuracy is pretty good, and his arm strength is pretty good. And you're never going to complete a real high percentage of long downfield passes, but he can still throw an accurate long ball. He does need to get a little bit better, I think, at the shorter throws. So that is probably a legitimate knock, his completion percentage. And it wasn't up there in the 60-plus, even 70% range. But he's got an awful lot of things. First, certainly he can improve on that. And then secondly, he has a lot of other strengths as well.
We're talking with Paul Rogers. He's the voice of Louisville football and basketball. He's here with us on the Huddle, 101.3 ESPN. Patriots linked to Lamar Jackson. Draft night is tonight. You mentioned that he's just a great person. Tell us about Lamar Jackson, the person. Because as we've learned, it takes a special kind of person to play here in New England for Coach Belichick.
Yeah, I would think so. And that's something that could really help him because nobody coaches a player any harder than Bobby Petrino does. And all Bobby Petrino would talk about during Lamar's time here was how much fun he was to coach. Yeah, he would get on him, but Lamar wanted that. He wants to be coached hard. He wants to learn the game. He loves practicing. He loves the football part of the game. He likes being with his teammates. All those things you think about the Patriots, the great team organization, the great bond that those teams seem to have. Lamar would fit in perfectly with that. He's a classy young man, very humble, very eager, confident in his abilities, but a really great young man who you're never going to have any character issues with Lamar Jackson. That's one thing I can guarantee you.
You've seen some dynamic athletes over the years in the ACC. Jameis Winston at Florida State comes to mind with just within the last couple of years. Where does Lamar Jackson rank in terms of some of the quarterbacks you've seen?
Well, he's up there just because of the wow factor. I mean, he did things you just don't see and making people miss. And even some throws that would kind of take your breath away with his arm strength and the way he could thread throws. You know, we had a pretty good one here right before Lamar named Teddy Bridgewater. We all thought he was going to be maybe the best we'd seen. And then Lamar came along, and he made probably more breathtaking plays than any player I've ever watched on a regular basis. I just, almost every game, he'd do something to make you gasp.
You know, it's pretty amazing. All along, I think, like most of the rest of the country, we've considered Louisville to be a basketball school. And has football infiltrated that? You know, on campus, is it seen as a two sport power? Does football still play second fiddle?
More so. This is always going to be a basketball town, just because of the culture of the state of Kentucky and the long-standing history of Louisville basketball. But certainly, in recent years, football has made great strides. They draw 50,000 or more a game. They've had an extraordinary number of players go pro in recent years. They've had top-flight talent, and this is very during the fall. This is very much a football area. Now, during the winter, basketball takes over, and even during the summer, basketball probably gets more. But when football season is here, they love football here, too.
Paul, I'll throw you the curveball and go to basketball for a second. We had on recently, last week, Walter McCarty, who was a longtime Celtics player and coach, but also coached with Rick Pitino at Louisville, and he spoke glowingly of his time with Rick Pitino. Not such great news around Pitino lately. What are your experiences with Rick Pitino, and what's the perception of him in Louisville?
Well, first off, let me just throw out Walter McCarty's a jewel. I loved the time he was here. He was just one of those guys that would always brighten your day.
And, yeah.
Good luck to him and his future. I had a great relationship with Pitino. The problem with Rick, you can argue this all day long. I still don't think he knew the things that went on, but you could argue the fact that he should have and that too many things went on. And that's primarily why he was let go with this latest scandal. There are other coaches like Larrañaga at Miami and some others, Sean Miller at Arizona, who weren't fired. But the reason Rick was because it was sort of the last in a line of transgressions, and people just got to the point where they were tired of it. But I don't question his character. I don't question his ability as a basketball coach. And he coached Louisville to some great times here. People will have to always remember him and give him credit for that.
Paul, we'll get you out of here on this, and I'll go back to football again real quick because the draft is tonight, and that's what we originally started talking about. People seem split on Baker Mayfield, but I think everybody is in agreement he's going to be a first-round pick. People are also split on Lamar Jackson. Do you think we hear his name called tonight, whether it's by the Patriots or somebody else?
I'm going to say yes, but the draft confounds me every year.
Yeah,
so
right.
I wouldn't be real confident in that, but I just think the guy's too good a talent. I think he's been under a lot of scrutiny and a lot of criticism to some degree because, you know, the talk came up, should he be a defensive back or whatever? Lamar simply downplayed that and said, no, I'm a quarterback. And you never know how much of that, frankly, is smoke screens from other teams trying to turn other people off the guy. So I think he's got the ability. I think he is a unique athlete, brings a different type of game. But in the end, I'm going to say he will be picked in the first round.
Well, the Patriots, they need a quarterback. They need a backup. They need a successor to Tom Brady, and it very well could be Lamar Jackson. And we'll find out just a few hours from now if he is picked by New England. So, Paul Rogers, we appreciate the time, the perspective, and we look forward to talking to you again.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
All right. Good job, Brady. I was looking up the latest mock drafts, whatever they're worth, guys. Mike Mayock. And Bucky Brooks have Lamar Jackson taken number 16 to the Baltimore Ravens. One has the Patriots taken Lamar Jackson at number 23, and that's Daniel Jeremiah. And the last one, Charlie Casserly, has Lamar Jackson all the way at the bottom of the first round at number 29 to the Jacksonville Jaguars. So take that for what it's worth. But wouldn't that be interesting? You've heard that before, and you heard him say, I would love to see the tie between the Patriots and Lamar Jackson. Wouldn't that be an interesting matchup? I'm not so sure he has the quality that the other four quarterbacks have, but he's a damn good one. I really believe that one.
Well, it would be interesting because it'd be so atypical from what the Patriots have done over the last 18 years. He's totally the antithesis of Tom Brady. He's mobile, and Tom Brady is immobile, and they just play very, very different ways. So it would be a very, very interesting dichotomy in that offense.
And by the way, Rich, you tell me, buddy, would you like to get him or not?
I mean, no. Would you? No, simply because I don't want to get a quarterback. I think that's a waste of a pick. I think Brady's got at least two good years left in him, and I'm not quite sold on someone like that as opposed to my Giants thinking where Eli may only have maybe one more good year. But I just think they're wasting a high pick to get a quarterback. I mean, he's going to come here. You think he wants to sit on the bench for 2 or 3 years?
Patriots need a quarterback in one of their first four picks. They have four picks in the first two rounds. Yeah. One of those picks needs to be a quarterback, whether it's Lamar Jackson at 23 or it's somebody else in the 40s or behind. They need a quarterback.
I would rather see them address the offensive line and linebacker with the highest picks.
But that's not sexy. And I know we have a special guest coming up next. Just real quick, you've heard the rumors. Baker Mayfield now the Vegas odds-on favorite to be taken number one overall by the Cleveland Browns. Do you buy that, yay or nay? Boy, my head's spinning. I've been Sam Darnold saying he was going to be number one. I'll live and die and go down with him if that's not going to be true. But, boy, it's amazing how some guy could jump up without throwing a football in the last 4 months or something like that. Do you believe that Baker Mayfield's going to be taken number one, guys?
I'm going to say yes at this point because it's the Browns, but I think it would be a mistake.
No idea. I mean, I think the second day you started as a co-host of the show, I just want everyone to know about this kid named Sam Darnold out of USC.
Yeah, I mean, I know.
You remember that? That was like the first words out of your mouth.
I know. Well, it's a shame if you could pass on him. So we'll see what happens. We got a special guest coming up next. Wait till you hear him next on 101.3 ESPN.
The Huddle is back. I'm sure you missed us. 101.3 ESPN.
All right, everybody, welcome back. You're in the Huddle right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Today is a different day. Arnie's in Los Angeles. It's NFL draft day, so we've altered some things. No big deal, little deal, no deal today, Rich. We do that every Thursday at 4:35, but we postponed it for today. And we usually do clean up your act right now, and we were gonna, but we got a call from a special friend.
Right, and someone who clearly needs to clean up his act almost on a daily basis.
So that's true. Yeah. If you don't remember, our old buddy Ryan Matlack, who had this job before me, he is a diehard Maple Leafs fan. He now works at ESPN, and he's licking his wounds today, but he wanted to call in anyway. So, Ryan, what's up, buddy?
Oh, boys, how are we doing? I hate hockey. Hope you're doing well.
Until next year.
I want you to know.
Yes.
I want you to know that in your honor, we have left this sound effect on our button bar. So we left the Go Leafs Go on the button bar in your honor.
Gotta love that. I appreciate that, boys. Yeah.
Go Leafs Go, and sure enough, they went. What happened?
All of a sudden, that second period ended, and they were heading back up to Toronto for some reason.
So
how about that?
How are you feeling emotionally? Because Rich is a spoiled brat when it comes to his team. So how are you feeling? Because I identify with losing. So how did you feel?
Well, it obviously was another dagger to the heart. You know, a lot of Leafs fans probably woke up this morning trying to tell themselves that it wasn't as bad as 2013. It obviously was still four unanswered goals after the second period ended. So from that standpoint, it's a tough one to get over. And there's obviously a high ceiling for this Leafs team. But, you know, if you had told any Leafs fan, I think Meg Babcock said this after the game, you had told them that it was going to come down to Game 7 in Boston to the third period. I don't think anybody in Toronto would have been, been out of shape about that. So, as far as, you know, having the lead going into the third period, that does take away any sort of secondary, feelings of happiness that you had. coming away from it. So overall, massive disappointment, but at the same time, no doubt in my mind that the right team won.
So did at any point you throw anything? Of course, you're working at ESPN nationally down in Bristol, and did you break anything or did you inflict any pain?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. I was working at the time, and I was watching it with coworkers. As I was watching 2013 with you, Rich, at a Buffalo Wild Wings in South Burlington.
Yes, so, I'll never forget.
I was still with people, so I had to mind my manners. But the best part was when a update anchor came in, knowing that I am somewhat familiar with hockey, and he handed me a card. And he, at this point, just to give you an idea, the Leafs had just blown the lead in the third. And he hands me the card, and it's got two names on it. And he goes, "I'm so sorry, I just need the pronunciation." And boy, I should have told him the names were Tory Krug and Jake DeBrusque, but I, for some reason, I gave him the right pronunciations, and I swallowed my pride. But I was having a kick out over that because, of course, I got to still do my due diligence and actually be a producer. But it was a little tricky. And the best part was Freddie Coleman, who you guys have had on the show and know well, giving me crap saying that he was so happy I wasn't actually working at the time. Because I had the whole third period off. Like, everybody made sure that I had the third period off so that I wouldn't ruin programming while the Leafs imploded, which, of course, a lot of people still expected. So, it was not the most ideal viewing situation, but I got through it, and I was happy to get out of there at 1 a.m.
Well, Ryan Matlack, former program director and personality here at 101.3 ESPN, I'm sorry for your loss. Rich is basking in your loss.
Yes.
But
right, of course.
I am sorry for your loss. Hey, we got to go to break. We got to get back to Arnie in Los Angeles, but we appreciate you calling in, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Hey, to Arnie, to all you guys, and to all the Bruins fans, congratulations. Hello. Goodbye.
See you, bud.
And I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, all right, buddy.
There he goes, Ryan Matlack. We'll go to a break when we come back. Arnie back in L.A. We'll get back into the NFL draft. That's next, 101.3 ESPN.
Back to the Huddle, where you can give us your take at 802-655-6672. Providing Arnie shuts up long enough to let you get a sentence in. 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You are in the Huddle right here at 101.3 ESPN, all accounted for. Brady's here, Rich is here, Arnie's here. Of course, I'm out in Los Angeles enjoying the sunshine, getting the chance to see my mom and my brother and everybody else out there. I got to just say, it was great to hear Ryan with you guys last segment, though. I got to tell you, there's nothing worse than doing a show and your producers have their favorite team on television and they're not paying attention to the show. I used to do a show in Chicago and my producers were Cub fans, and every pitch, every inning, it was Cubs this, Cubs that. I wanted to smack them. I couldn't take it anymore. It's horrible. You know what I mean?
Arnie, I love having Ryan on, but every time we talk to him, I love talking to him, but it's like, you're talking to my ex, or I'm talking to your ex. Maybe that's what it is. I'm talking to your ex. I'm just wondering how many listeners are wishing Ryan was here and not me. That's what that's what I'm thinking.
No, Ryan was just one of those guys that obviously still is. It was impossible not to like him. Always, he just came in with a smile on his face all day long, and I was kind of bummed when he left.
Hey, wow. Look at you, Rich. Wow. Look, like Ryan, and I don't like anybody. So
is
there
that
you
not
go.
Okay to be bummed that a nice guy left your daily
Rich,
presence?
Rich, let me explain something to you. So you know when you get remarried and have your second wife.
Yeah,
so just so
happen.
You understand, when you're with your second wife, do not say, you know, I got to tell you, my first wife was really very pretty and awesome and just a great person. Those are things you probably just don't want to say next time around. Just a little advice
really?
From me to you.
So you're comparing my relationship with Ryan Matlack, who was just this drinking buddy of mine for a couple of years.
Buddy? He was the producer and he ran the station.
Well, whatever.
Have a little more respect.
Yeah, but I didn't care about that stuff. Let's get to what's important. He was my pal downtown. And a designated driver, I might add. So that was his real value in
the
my
drinking
world.
Buddy is a designated driver?
Yeah, he's designated. I never saw him have a drop of alcohol.
So then he's
once.
Not a drinking buddy.
Well, he's a buddy that comes out with me.
So he's a wingman.
Yes. All right, we'll go with that.
a wingman just as important as a wife. 50-50. Just wow. the same equation there, same thing. But we got draft today, my friends. And look, the talk is that the Browns are going to take Baker Mayfield number one. Look, I am shocked. I am absolutely shocked when I heard the news today, late breaking about this. I thought for sure, after all these months, and Sam Darnold on top of the draft board at number one, and now if he drops and they do take Baker Mayfield, first of all, I just want to say something. If the Browns take Baker Mayfield, it's not that I don't think Baker Mayfield could be a good NFL pro. Everybody keeps saying that the Browns can't swing and miss on this draft with the number one and number four pick. So with so many great quarterbacks in the draft, why would you take a reach with Baker Mayfield when I think that Darnold and Rosen are both more mature and more along and are better quarterbacks? So I'm a little surprised about that, guys.
The thing I want to know, Arnie, is what about this? If the Browns really want Mayfield, couldn't they get Mayfield at four? Or do you think the Jets would take Mayfield no matter what?
I think the Jets are going to take Baker Mayfield no matter what. Now, if Baker Mayfield does go number one to the Cleveland Browns, somebody is going to trade up to the Giants, pick at number two, and they will definitely take Sam Darnold. I'm thinking it could be Buffalo. If I was Buffalo, I would trade both my first-round picks, both my second-round picks, my third-round pick, number one next year. I don't care what it takes. Here's my one golden opportunity. You get one bite at the apple. Here it is. I would do that. Bank, forget about everything else. Remember when the Saints gave up all their draft picks for Ricky Williams? Well, that didn't turn out very good. But that didn't turn out good because he was a running back. But here's a quarterback for you. I got to go ahead and trade up to do that, and the Giants just get that King's ransom and build their team up. And I think Baker Mayfield will get dropped to number three, though. That's a tough pick between Baker Mayfield and Josh Rosen if Josh Rosen doesn't get taken at number two.
Doesn't this just seem so simple, though, if you're the Cleveland Browns? And I don't mean to dumb it all down, but don't you take the best quarterback who most people agree is Darnold with your one pick and get Chubb with the fourth pick and just completely turn around the franchise's future at both sides of the ball in one night?
Well, they've already, remember, they drafted Myles Garrett last year.
Yeah.
Of course they would like Bradley Chubb also. But the thing I wonder is, if the Browns take Mayfield, it's not that people think that Darnold is necessarily the best quarterback. I think they think he is the safest quarterback and the most polished quarterback right now. And I have to give our intern Nathan credit on this too. Darnold's 20 years old.
Yes.
Mayfield's 23 years old.
Huh.
So you talk
Correct.
About Mayfield needing to mature and all that.
Right.
He's already 3 years the senior of Darnold. If he's not mature now, how much more mature is he really going to get?
Strong, though, that's a strong point there. And, you know, maybe they say that's why it's a good pick for the Giants to take Sam Darnold so he can sit on the bench and mature and won't have a problem behind Eli Manning. Can you imagine learning 2 years behind Eli Manning and then the third year, you're only going to be, 22 years old, and then you get the start for the Giants. So that could be a great situation for the Giants. But you mentioned, can you imagine the Browns getting Baker Mayfield with that number one pick and then getting Saquon Barkley at number four and having that great 1-4 combination there?
And I think we'd feel better about it. If that happened, I think people would look at the Browns draft in totality and say, okay, good job. But if they take Baker Mayfield with that number one pick, for whatever time period there is between 1 and 4, there's going to be a lot of outcry, especially on social media.
All of a sudden, I don't hear you guys, or not you guys, but I don't hear anybody barking all of a sudden the last 12 hours about Josh Allen. I'm wondering if those tweets, was he really going to be the number one pick overall? Was that just a smokescreen? Was that just BS? Is he really dropping down? How far will he drop? You know, there's always going to be that one person that drops like Aaron Rodgers did. I saw Mike Mayock say that Josh Rosen was going to drop down to like number 15. I don't know what to make this of anymore. I my head spins from this, but if there is one person that's going to drop down now, it's going to be Josh Allen because of that that big story that came out today.
Boy, I don't know, especially with the Jets sitting there. I mean, what do you think the Jets are doing? I mean, if Baker Mayfield goes one, you've got to imagine the Jets, if he's still there, past the Giants, go with Darnold at that spot, don't they?
I think the Jets want Mayfield or Rosen, Arnie, and I don't know about your feeling. I feel like they want Mayfield or Rosen. They did a lot of work on Darnold, but Rosen just had, whether you like him or not, He has this outspoken quality that would play well in New York that kind of reminds you of Broadway Joe. He feels more like New York City to me than Sam Darnold does, and I think that matters to the Jets.
What would you – you know, it's interesting. If you're the Giants, would you let somebody trade up all the way from the bottom and get to you, or would you charge the Jets a ransom just to move up one spot, and you move down one spot and still get Saquon Barkley? I don't know what you would get for just moving down one spot, but seems like people are giving up a whole heck of a lot. The Jets would be afraid that somebody would jump to that number two spot. Would you have to jump up one spot just to make sure you get the quarterback of your dreams?
I'll tell you, you better do your homework in a case like that, because that could, boy, could that ever backfire.
It is. Now, Arnie, let's move over to the Patriots, because Rich and I were talking about this before the show.
Yeah.
What do Patriot fans, and we want your help, 802-655-6672, what do Patriot fans consider a success tonight? So it doesn't mean will they get this player, that player in particular, but what will Patriot fans, and Rich, I'll start with you because I have a thought on this too.
Okay.
What would you consider a success tonight for the Patriots?
I would say shoring up the Nate Solder spot, and everyone's been talking about Colton Miller out of UCLA with that 23rd picker, and if he's still available, I don't think they're going to take a chance by skipping him at 23. Also, I think you've got to get a linebacker. You got to get a good pro. I mean, the last time they had two, I'm trying to think of who they got. It was Hightower and
They took Chandler Jones.
Chandler Jones, yeah. So of course, you know, oops on that one. But I mean, that was a great pick, obviously. But imagine getting Hightower and Jones the last time you had two picks in the first round. Can you imagine hitting on something like that again and making that team that much better?
I think a success – go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I just think even with Hightower coming back next year, you can never have enough linebackers, and I would love to see them do that. Maybe something in the secondary. And you notice I'm not saying quarterback. I just don't see it. Just like to a point with the Giants, I just don't see it at all with the Patriots. I think Brady's got a couple good years left in him.
I want to see – to me, a success for the Patriots is simple. Use both the picks. If they trade up in this draft, that's where I'm going to have a problem.
Yep, I agree.
I think what they need to do is utilize – they're not in this position very often where they have two first-round picks and they also have 2 seconds. So they have 4 picks in the top 42, I think it is. Use all of those picks. And I don't – they do need a quarterback. And you and I differ on when they should get it. I think they should take one whenever they feel it's appropriate, whether that's at 23 or whether that's at 41, whatever it is. They need a quarterback at some point in those 4 picks. But they need to restock some of their positions. They need to get younger, and you can only do all of that by utilizing all of the picks. If they trade up to get a quarterback, I don't care who it is, I will consider it a mistake.
Wow. Well, I guess then you're going to consider it a mistake, because you see, this is what I would do if I was the Patriots. Let me explain. So when I was young, okay, I had a friend of mine who didn't have a TV, and he had just gotten a TV. Not everybody had TVs when we were little, Rich. I'm sure you remember that. You know what I mean?
Right. Was it invented when you were a kid?
No, stop it. Now, he didn't have a TV, and it was like the best thing that he ever got. It was like, oh, my goodness. And I had one TV, and I couldn't live without it. Let me explain. And the reason I bring that up, the Patriots have never in the history of their franchise, a running back that's like a Hall of Famer, one that people just gravitate to. You know, it's like having a dishwasher in your house for the first time or having a TV in your house for the first time. I would trade those 2 picks. I would move up to number 2. And if I'm the Patriots, I'd take that running back, that Saquon Barkley, and say, yes, I've got a running back now that's going to be the future of my team, that's going to be with Tom Brady at the end of his, so he doesn't have to pass so much. That's what I would do. Because when you mentioned replacing Nate Solder, the Giants got Nate Solder, and everybody's, okay, their offensive line problems are fixed now. Well, was it that simple? Then let the Patriots get themselves another offensive lineman from somebody else and say, okay, our problems are now fixed now. So if it's that easy, go look in the free agency, look somewhere else, and go for the home run right now with the running back.
Yeah, you'd better get one through free agency, because you suddenly don't have any draft picks to block for Barkley.
Well, I mean, that, yeah, that, I understand that, but, you know, you could fix that offensive line, Brady and Rich, you could fix that. You know what I'm saying?
Arnie, I don't understand
why.
Look, you could have that opinion, but I see zero in way in which that happens. And I know you and I have battled for the better part of 12 months now about how the Patriots view their backfield, but they have invested heavily in terms of money and roster personnel already in that backfield. And I know you're going to tell me, well, if you get a chance to take a transformational talent like Barkley, then damn everybody else. But you've already got money in Mike Gillisley, money in James White, money in Rex Burkhead. You've got Hill, who they got from Cincinnati. They have put a lot of resources into fortifying that backfield by committee, and I just don't see them going to all of that work just to undo it and take Saquon Barkley and give themselves, as you say, five running backs.
Right. Well, let me ask you guys a question. If Tom Brady was asked his opinion and gave his 100% honest opinion, what would you do if you were taking the Patriots? What would you like them as your first pick? What do you think he would say? Offensive lineman, running back, wide receiver? What do you think Tom Brady would say?
It's very different lenses to view it through. Tom Brady, the player that he is currently, he wants a left tackle. He wants somebody to...
Oh, no, I would have said a big-time... Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry. I would have said a big-time running back, but go ahead.
He wants somebody to protect his blind side and keep him playing for the three or four more years that he wants. Tom Brady, the executive, might look at it very differently and say, well, let's trade up. Let's get the quarterback of the future because Tom Brady, the player, isn't going to be there forever. But Tom Brady, the player, wants somebody who's going to help them win now and help prolong his personal career.
Rich, I don't know. If I'm a big-time quarterback, I'm saying, give me a running back. Help me out. What do you want? If you're a big-time star like LeBron in the NBA, what do you want? You want another big-time star to come play with you. But you're not, you don't want just like a piece here or a piece there. I want another big-time star running back.
But why are you tinkering with an offense that has dominated historically by not having by having a running back by committee? I mean, why change that right now? Do you really think that Brady's going to want to spend his last two or three years handing the ball off and hoping guy works out?
Well, I think he's going to pass last.
No, but
that's
look at the success of this team. And Corey Dillon, I guess, to a point. I mean, they had a couple of guys, but, you know, I mean, you could go back to Craig James and Sam Bam Cunningham and Jim Nance and all those guys from 100 years ago. This is not a team that bases its offense around the running game.
It's interesting because teams are, you know, people like are saying, we want that franchise quarterback. We want that franchise quarterback we've never had. Well, I don't know why you can't ask that if there's one franchise running back that people think, and it's Saquon Barkley, and you've never, in my opinion, had a franchise running back. All right, we asked you the opinion through Tom Brady's eyes. What do you think Patriot fans are saying right now with their first pick? Take an offensive lineman, take a big-time wide receiver, or take a big-time running back? I think they'd say, if we can get Saquon Barkley, I bet your Patriot fans right now would say, take Saquon Barkley.
But not if you have to give up the farm on draft night. See, I just wouldn't do that. I'd rather have four good players than one great one.
I think the Patriot fans, Arnie, will look at this and say, yeah, we'd like the home run player like you're referencing, but bottom line, this team needs to get younger, and they need to fill up some holes. Right now, they don't have a hole at quarterback. Right now, they don't have a hole at running back, and they don't have a hole at wide receiver. They do have holes on the offensive line, at pass rusher, at linebacker, and in the secondary. I think Patriot fans are smart enough to realize what is a want versus what is a need.
Do you think it's easy to I think it's the toughest thing to replace on your team in the draft is offensive line. I think that's something I want to give. You want to trust some guy that you're taking out of wherever, Central Oklahoma or something like that in the fourth round as Tom Brady's left side tackle? I mean, is that what we want to trust? Because I'm not so sure that's the way I'm shopping, that's for sure.
No, that's why I'm saying a guy like a Colton Miller who's been protecting the blind side of Josh Rosen for how many years now at UCLA. That's why I say you got to bring a guy like that in.
Dan Winooski said, as a Patriot hater, I hope they go with Arnie's plan because it's terrible. I don't understand why it's terrible.
Absolutely.
I'm giving you a big-time running back there.
Jake in Williston says that's a dumb plan because running back has almost zero value. He tweets that.
Tell that to the Cowboys. Yeah, tell that to Ezekiel Elliott, the Cowboys.
Hey,
sure.
Arnie, we got to go to break because Celtics-Bucks game six is tonight. Celtics are looking to close them out. Chris Forsberg covers the Celtics for ESPN. He's waiting on the other end for us.
All right, we'll get to Chris Forsberg. He's coming up next right here in the Huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
Good guys are back. The Huddle with Rich, Arnie, and Brady on 101.3 ESPN.
Oh, no.
Welcome back. You're in the huddle right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. It is Thursday. Celtics basketball coming up tonight. Game 6. Celtics looking for the clincher. 3-2 series lead as we shift back to Milwaukee. Let's go out to the TikTok Jewelers guest line to talk with a guy who's been with the Celtics all season. It's ESPN Celtics reporter Chris Forsberg. Chris, how are you?
What's up, guys? How are you?
Hey.
Good. We appreciate it. Hoping for a series-clinching win tonight. Let's go back to Game 5 first. Did Marcus Smart make that big a difference? Because it certainly felt like he did.
Yeah, I think you look at his stat line and you say, well, he missed 5 shots. He had 5 turnovers. The defensive numbers weren't probably as eye-popping as you would have thought. But, man, if you just watch that game with your eyes, you're sitting there saying, 40 seconds into his first shift back from tearing a ligament in his thumb, and he's diving on the floor, doing all those little Marcus Smart things. I thought when he rejected Giannis at the rim was incredible. It's just, he makes plays that no one else makes. And I think about the end of the game, he's rolling around on the floor. He's got 4 bucks on top of him, and he still manages to feed Al Horford for sort of the clincher basket there. I mean, that's just what Marcus Smart does. He makes winning plays and gives you the best chance to win. And I just think Brad Stevens said it best before the game last night. He said it's non-debatable. It's like the Celtics are a better team when Marcus Smart is out there.
And it's so funny because, as you said, you look at the numbers, you see whatever, 8 points a game or whatever he gets. But isn't he kind of a really important re-sign?
Yeah. So, like, especially when you look ahead to the summer, I think the way the Celtics are structured now, it's not like they have the money to just go out and get free agents anymore. And so you really have to take advantage of the assets you have, and that's either draft picks or the mid-level exception, or with a guy like Marcus, it's bird rights. And so you can spend more than you can on a typical player to keep him here. I also think the Celtics need a contract in that $10 to $12 million range to maybe facilitate some deals, maybe further down the road, or just you got to give yourself some salary flexibility there, and building trades, as we know right now, is a little difficult when 3 of the guys at the top of your roster are making $30-plus million. So I think it's really important the Celtics bring him back. I know some people are sitting there saying, well, Rozier came on really strong this year. Is there room for all these guys? And I'm thinking, did you watch this year? Like, everyone's dropping like flies. You need as many bodies out there as possible. I think it would certainly behoove the Celtics to find a way to bring Marcus back.
What did the Celtics do differently on Giannis Antetokounmpo in Game 5? Because he only attempted 10 shots. I think it was only the third time this year he had attempted that few shots. What did they do differently on him to not allow him to control the game from Milwaukee?
Well, first off, props for going with his last name, because I just say Giannis or Greek Freak, and like when people say his last name, I get really impressed. So
I think
what the Celtics really just did is they went small, and what that gives them is the ability to switch everything. And so you don't have those plays where maybe he comes off a pick and roll and all of a sudden he's a smaller guy. It's like there's just more natural size or more bodies to throw at him. It clogs the lane. It doesn't let him drive. I thought the most startling number was that they took him out of transition. Now, that might have been more offensive-based. Maybe they didn't turn the ball over as much. Maybe they didn't take as bad shots and put themselves in bad positions. But really, I wouldn't say a conservative game plan, but they certainly went out of their way to make things difficult for Giannis and really forced the Bucks supporting cast to step up. And I think what we've seen in this series is that role players, bench guys especially, are having trouble on the road, and I think we've seen that play out through NBA history. It's just tougher for those guys to step up in that situation. All of a sudden, Snell's not making as many three-pointers, Bond Maker's not making as many open looks. So it was a good game plan. I'll be interested to see how the Bucks respond tonight here in Game 6. Did they make some tweaks? Do they try to go big, force the Celtics' hand a little bit? Will the Celtics stick with Semi Ojeleye and let him be that switch-happy guy at the center of the lineup? It could be a fun little chess match here as the Celtics look to close it out.
Chris, as a guy who grew up at the old smelly, smoky garden, sitting in the upper deck in the $3 seats with my dad, and the thing I loved about it is you'd go and you knew they were going to win. I mean, they were good, obviously, back then. But what is it about the NBA home court advantage? I mean, is it the familiarity with the rims and the bounce of the floor that makes the NBA, the home records, especially in the playoffs for NBA, is so much better than any other sport?
Yeah, you know what's staggering is that the Celtics were a really good road team this year, and I sort of thought after they won those first 2 games, I said, they're just going to go up to Milwaukee. Milwaukee doesn't seem like the most imposing place to have to go play. I mean, I don't think the BMO Harris Center has this reputation of being overly daunting. But I give them credit. That place was rocking. And they've got a little fan section that goes wild and pumps guys up, and their mascot's doing backflips off the T-shirt cannon. And, you know, there's just a different intensity in the playoffs. And Brad Stevens even said that. Whether guys legitimately just get fired up or whether their confidence is higher because, you know, you got that home crowd behind you, there is a definitive advantage in the playoffs. And what I think is remarkable, I was looking back the other day, and I forget who pointed it out, but it's a great point. The Celtics didn't win a road playoff game during the 2008 finals run until, I think, the Eastern Conference finals against Detroit. But as long as you take care of home and court advantage, that's why you play to be one of these higher seeds, and things tend to work out. But, yeah, it's tough to go on the road and win in the playoffs, and that's why tonight's a bit of a daunting challenge for the Celtics.
Is it my imagination, or has TD Garden gotten a lot louder in the last maybe year to 2 years for the home team?
See, I was lucky enough to kind of I wasn't quite the beat reporter at that point, but I was muscling my way into some of these games back in 08. And that building got pretty loud when, like, In the Air Tonight was playing and KG's out there thumping his chest and the drum roll hits. That building was pretty rocking. But I will give him credit. I do think you're right. I think just even fans know, like, there, it just comes a time in the playoffs you tend to ratchet it up. And listen, I kind of laugh every time the PA announcer says at the end of a regular season game, he says, you know, thanks to the best sixth man in the league, the Celtics fans. And I'm thinking, how much does that really help you when you're playing the Orlando Magic on a Tuesday in January? But I do think in the playoffs, there's maybe a little something to that.
Chris Forsberg covers the Celtics for ESPN. He's here with us on the Huddle on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Chris, I'll admit it, like a lot of people who follow you probably, 3 weeks ago, I didn't want to trade Jason Tatum for anybody, but I would have traded Jaylen Brown for Kawhi Leonard. Now I'm not so sure after what he's done in this series. He has really opened my eyes. What have you seen from Jaylen Brown, and just how valuable is he?
Yeah, it's funny. One of the guys I was sitting with last night before the game, he's a big Jaylen Brown guy, and he keeps trying to tell me, like, am I swayed? Because I always try to make the case that I think Jason Tatum has the higher ceiling. But, man, Jaylen Brown's been phenomenal in these playoffs, and he's really shown me probably more than, just like you said, than he expected going in here. His ability to really go to another level and be the sort of the go-to presence on offense and hit big late-game three-pointers. I mean, I knew these young guys were confident and that they weren't going to be rattled by the moment, but you're still talking about a 21-year-old and a 20-year-old, and I just thought that would eventually kind of show itself. And now, even like in a night like Game 5 where they don't have the best statistical nights, they're still out there impacting it. Jaylen's still hitting big fourth-quarter shots. I agree. It's getting tougher and tougher to sell Celtics fans on the idea that even if a superstar did pop available, that maybe they should consider moving one of these guys, because you just figure you got them under your control. They're only going to get better as they get more time here. It's fun to think about where they can get to. It's fun to think about what they can do when all of a sudden defense has got to pay a lot more attention to guys like Gordon Hayward and Kyrie Irving, and what that might allow guys like Tatum and Brown to do.
I'm looking at the box score for Game 5, and I see Rozier didn't break 15 points again. Tatum had less than 10. Brown had less than 15 also, and I'm thinking to myself, Brad Stevens is a wizard. What makes him so good?
I don't know. You know, it's funny. From a very, very basic level, he instills this trust and this confidence in his players that, you know, a guy like Shane Larkin gets signed this offseason. He has no idea what his role is going to be. The Celtics have 15 players on their roster already at that point, so they're not even sure they're going to be able to carry him into the season. But Shane goes out there, I think, in the third game of the season. He gets thrown in against Philadelphia. The Celtics are 0-2. Gordon Hayward's gone down. He plays tremendous. And, you know, Brad pulls him aside and's like, listen, you played great. I'm going to try to get you some minutes here, but I don't know. And, like, two nights later, he was a DNP. But these guys don't get frustrated. They stay committed. They understand that Brad is just, his singular goal is trying to make this team as good as it can and matching up as well as they can against an opponent. I don't know. It just breeds some sort of confidence. It makes young guys that they don't lose that confidence in themselves. When you have one bad performance, it really builds these guys up. And ultimately, Brad just knows how to push the right buttons. Like, I don't think anyone was sitting there last night saying, you know, the move to counter Giannis is to go ahead and throw Semi Ojeleye, who has never started an NBA game before. Let's put him in there and see what he can do. But The second half of game four, they saw a little something in the way they could defend with him on the floor. And, you know, give Brad credit. He's not only is he good with the individual X's and O's on ATOs and late game situations, but he knows how to press the right buttons going into games too.
Chris, if the Celtics do win either tonight or Saturday, they'll be playing Philadelphia in the next round. Should they be as scared as I think they should be about that matchup?
Well, they're going to get them. I mean, that's the one who they'll line up with. And I don't know. I think there's something to the notion of when a team is on a run like Philadelphia is on, I think, 21 of their last 22 included in the regular season, you feel like they got to come back to earth at some point. And no disrespect to the Heat, because they play excellent defense, and they certainly gave the 76ers some trouble in that series, maybe more than the overall series score reflected. But I don't know. I don't look at the 76ers and necessarily think world beaters. It will be interesting to see how exactly they try to match up if they get there with guys like Embiid, and how do they deal with all the shooters the 76ers can spread the floor with. It'll be a fascinating matchup, but you know, I look across the bracket and we all wonder, is LeBron going to go into full-on playoff mode and dominate and see what he does, and the Raptors and still very good, and really whoever emerges from that series, if the Wizards can kind of continue to push them. It'll be fascinating to me. There's no easy matchup in here. I thought that even from the start when they drew the Bucks. But, yeah, Philly's going to be an interesting matchup if they get to that round.
Chris, we'll get you out of here on this, and I know we don't have a lot of time, so I'll ask you quickly. Red Sox have played very well. So the Bruins have been in multiple playoff games this week, and the NFL draft starts tonight in addition to the Celtics. Where are the allegiances of the Boston sports fan most heading right now?
Well, I'm totally biased, so I'm hoping like people are jumping on the Celtics bandwagon at this point. I'd like to thank the Red Sox for cooling off a little bit and letting the spotlight stay on the playoff teams for a little bit here. Listen, Patriots are always going to be the big story because of all the drama down there, but I just get the sense that, you know, the ratings were up on the TV numbers this year for the Celtics. I think people are looking at this product even when they didn't have their all-stars out there, and they're intrigued. I think they're going to be really intrigued next season when they got everybody out there and they're maybe a more of a legit title contender. But this year's been fun in a different way because there just wasn't those big expectations. And, you know, here they are on the cusp of getting to the conference semifinals and maybe getting further after that. So it's been fun. So hopefully plenty of room on the bandwagon. Get all your friends on board.
Game six is tonight. Celtics looking to close out the series in Milwaukee. Chris Forsberg has covered the Seas all year long. Does a great job for ESPN. Chris, we appreciate it.
Hey, thanks, guys. Take care. Thanks.
All right. And, of course, game six. Looking forward to that, guys. I just want to say, Giannis, it wasn't that he had 16 points and people are going to say, well, he's not going to have 16 points again, so you better be ready for game number six. It's the fact that they only held him to 10 field goal attempts.
Yes. Yep.
That was phenomenal. You see, he shot 50%. He was 5 of 10. But it's the 10 that's the magic number. Because if he was 5 of 25, I'd say, well, look, you're in trouble. He's not shooting 5 of 25 again, so you better be prepared. 5 of 10, he's going to have to look for his shots. I don't know if that means if he's going to force it to go to the bucket more. But look for him to be more aggressive.
Well, Marcus Smart certainly made a big difference in Game 5.
Yes.
And expect him to be... You know, he's just able to open up more defensive flexibility.
Doesn't it feel like, though, looking ahead to tonight, that Milwaukee's going to win this game? I feel like Antetokounmpo's going to come out and put up his usual 35. And it just, to me, it just feels, even as a Celtics fan, like this one, it ain't happening tonight.
You know, I just want to say that I think it could happen tonight. And if they want to go ahead, and I think it's going to be a great series against Philadelphia, and they need every advantage they can get, and it starts with making sure this series doesn't go 7 instead of 6. So they get the win tonight. They end this thing. Again, I'm not talking about a lot of rest. I just mean one game less. I can't wait for that Philadelphia series. I don't want to look ahead, but I will. I'm set. Yeah. Yes, but I will. And look, I think that one's going to be a 7-game set. And as Chris told you, what, they won 20 of 21 or something like that? That's insane. Yeah. They had a 17-game winning streak. Just insane what they're doing. I think that's going to be an unbelievable matchup. Brady, what do we got coming up next?
Well, we're going to get to some controversy around the Red Sox. That's next.
Yes, we'll get to that next right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Step one, watch sports. Step two, talk about sports. Now, back to the huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
Thank you.
What song is this, bro? What is this?
This is Californication by Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Red Hot Chili Peppers. Okay. Come on.
I'm sorry. My bad. I mean, but there's so many great California songs. Yeah. You couldn't just stick with the Beach Boys or something? I mean, come on now.
What, I played Beach Boys, Katy Perry, Tupac, Chili Peppers, anything with California in it.
All right.
Going to California by Led Zeppelin for the classic rockers?
Okay. What, maybe.
Who sings Going Back to Cali? Going Back to Cali.
Sounds just like it.
It sounds just like that.
Whatever it is.
I should actually know that off the top of my head.
Yeah, that's a popular song for crying out loud. Yeah,
if it's not
by,
a popular one.
It's by LL Cool J.
Okay, so there you go. You knew what it was. All right, get to the story about what's going on with the Red Sox as they rename Yawkey Way, which was hard to pronounce for me anyway, but go ahead and get to that.
Yeah, the Red Sox are officially renaming Yawkey Way. This stems from, remember, the Adam Jones incident last year where there was some racially insensitive language. And then, you know, the more diving into it you do, you find out that Tom Yawkey, who was the previous owner of the Red Sox a long time ago, but was very racist and bigoted himself. The Red Sox were the last team to integrate, so they're trying to disassociate themselves from his legacy, and they have renamed it Jersey Street, which is what it was prior to. And I'll start it with this, and Rich, you've been a Red Sox fan for a long time, so I'll say something quick and then let you go. This is a very complicated issue.
Yep.
On the surface, this looks like a great decision. On the surface level, we look at this and say, you're disassociating from racism, and that's what the country needs. And that is how I first took it. But when you start to really peel back the onion on this, it's very complex, and there are a lot of interesting issues on all sides of this thing.
And it's been an absolute firestorm in Boston for several years, and it came to a head. Was it today? I mean, this decision
today.
Just happened, so no more Yawkey Way. It's such a part of the Fenway experience. This is a tricky one, absolutely. I pored over this for about a half an hour trying to come up with an opinion on it. In this day and age, I guess it's the right thing to do, but you can look at it in two different ways. You have one side that says, well, whether it's true or not, it's associated with racism, so let's move on with a new name. And then you've got the other side saying you're tearing down history because it's offensive, which teaches nobody anything. So it's a very tricky slope here.
Yeah, Arnie, what is your thought?
Look. First thing is, when I'm in Los Angeles, you know, they have a museum here, the Holocaust Museum, and it's not because they want to have a museum to honor things. It's so you don't forget history. And that's the way I always took it. When we tear down statues and when we tear down stuff from history, we have a tendency to maybe forget what other people before us went through, their struggles, their plights, and that's something we should never, ever forget. Not to get too serious, but when we hide history, when we try to get rid of it, when we try to push it away and say, no, we don't want to be reminded of it, maybe perhaps that's the wrong way. And I'm not going to say one way is right or the other, but I'm for keeping history in front of us, whether it's in the books or the statues or in a street name, so people can always know what that person's about so we don't forget stuff like that.
And I read a lot on this today, and cultural figures in Boston from, the mayor says, I'm not displeased with this, but I don't know that I'm pleased either because of all the reasons you just said. African-American leaders in the community said that they acknowledge this is a slippery slope because if you're going to rename Yawkey Way, are you going to go and rename every Washington and Jefferson Street
or
avenue?
Columbus Circle, right in the middle of Boston.
Well, you know, it's interesting you brought that up. George Washington University now may be changing their name, right? Am I correct on that also? That's an historic university. What are you, serious? It's one of the most historic universities going, and they may just change the name of that one also.
And to put it simply, I mean, just changing, and I know it's a step, but is this going to cure racism long term to change the name of Yawkey Way? I mean,
it's not about is it going to cure racism, but what is the best way so we don't forget about racism or that we can go ahead and make it better in the future? That, you know, I don't know if we'll ever cure something like that. And the getting rid of all the reminders may not be the best way, I think.
Well, and don't forget, right across the street when you get off the subway or right there past Kenmore, it's the Yawkey train station. So, yeah. I mean, they're going to have to make some more changes, I would assume.
And there's also the complexities of the Yawkey family, and the Yawkey Foundation has given a lot of money over the years. And they've given it to the inner cities. They've given it to minority causes.
Yep.
So the Yawkey Family Foundation has done a lot, even for people of color and for people who are disadvantaged financially in some ways. And they say this isn't about the foundation, it's about the person himself. So again, on the surface, Arnie, you're right, this looks good, but do you, you know, they say those who forget history are damned to repeat it, I think is the saying. I agree with that. What if they did this? And this is something I think, it sounds like a cop-out, but I think it might be the best compromise.
Hyphenated name?
No, not that. No. If they kept it Yawkey Way and had a plaque or a statue nearby basically saying, this is called Yawkey Way, here's who Tom Yawkey was, and this is what we're trying to move past from. Or you do rename it, but you have a statue commemorating saying, this used to be called Yawkey Way, and here's why, in fact, we changed it.
It's kind of like Hall of Famers that aren't going to get into the Hall of Fame.
Yes.
That with PEDs, maybe a special wing, or here's a bust or a statue of so-and-so, but we want to remind you that perhaps, or he did, take PEDs. That's kind of the same, you know, thinking there, I guess.
Yeah, the asterisk.
Yeah, exactly. What if somebody wants to know, what's Yawkey Way? Why did they name it Yawkey Way? And you can start the conversation about who he was, whether it's for good or bad. It does start the conversation, especially with younger people.
In this day and age, I find myself saying, yes, change the name. But then I also acknowledge that, again, everything, and you can laugh a little bit more about this topic in what I'm about to say. I heard Mike Greenberg say this a long time ago, and I found it right. You know, are you going to change? They were talking about changing the name of the Redskins or the Indians because it's been offensive.
Right.
Well, you know, would you change the name of the Hurricanes or, you know, the Storm? Things that have killed people. Those are offensive.
The Pirates. Pirates are not good people. You know what I mean?
So I understand that if you change the name of everything that's ever been offensive or everything that's ever done something bad, you are opening up that can of worms to a lot of other street names, team names, universities that honor people that are not perfect.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when does it end? I mean, that's the thing. And this is just another. Like I said, this is a tough one to take a stance on because it goes both ways. It's so hard to look past what the name Tom Yawkey and the Yawkey Foundation has done. I mean, we're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars into, as you said, inner city programs. They've done so many good things in the name of Tom Yawkey. So
I was going to say, what about Alex and Moncton said Yawkey Foundation Way? Question mark.
They thought they thought about that. They floated that idea out there. What if they had named it David Ortiz Way? What if they had named it Nomar Garcia Parra?
No,
but
did
I don't
you see
care,
that? That's the same thing. We don't know enough behind the scenes of people. I'm not saying anything against Nomar or against Ortiz, but you know, later on, maybe 30 years from now, you find something terrible, and you know, it's all over again. You start all over with that.
Yeah, and there is a David Ortiz Way.
Okay,
they just commemorated.
Yeah, that's
it
right.
Like
that's
two
right.
Years
by the way, congratulations to Brady. You know why, Brady? Don't you?
Why? Oh, the mistake of the day.
You made the biggest mistake of the day in the history of the mistake of the day.
There is a song called "Going Back to Cali" by LL Cool J. There just also is "Going Back to Cali" by the Notorious B.I.G.
Ryan in Georgia, Owen in Burlington. I think Alex and one other person all said Brady. Travis in Colchester all said Brady. It's Biggie Smalls. Now you got me. Are you staying by what you're saying, Brady? Is that what you're telling me?
There is a song "Going Back to Cali" by LL Cool J, but I do believe the one you were referencing was Biggie Smalls.
There you go. The mistake of the day. Pick a name. We'll get to the mistake of the day. We'll see who gets the qualifier. I don't know what you guys did for Last Story Standing yesterday, but Brady, you have – it must be like Christmas for you. We'll tell you that. Coming up next right here.
Time for one last piece of news gone untouched throughout the show. Wacky or insightful? It's time for Last Story Standing on the Huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, our qualifier. Let's give it to Ryan in Georgia, even though Jake and Wilson said, no way, man, y'all are crazy. Brady is right here. The L.A. Cali song is far more iconic.
The LL Cool J song.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. L.A. Cool. That says Cali, though. It's more
the
iconic.
The LL Cali song.
Yeah, then Biggie. So he said, by the way, it's one of the greatest intros of any hip-hop song ever, not to mention the LL version. Probably came out 10 to 12 years prior, but we'll make Ryan our qualifier for that. Right, Brady? So go ahead and tell everybody thank you for that.
Yeah, the mistake of the day. Remember, you can always get in 802-655-6672 with that mistake of the day, and you're trying to win that 101.3 ESPN baseball cap limited edition brought to you by Joann's Old Embroidery Works at Joann's Uniforms in Colchester, where they help small businesses with screen printing, embroidery, and vehicle lettering to get it right the first time.
Rich, Brady's in heaven, Rich. Brady's in heaven, Rich. Listen to this. Well, wow. You're a baseball player. Brady's a baseball player. What do baseball players eat all the time?
Sunflower seeds.
You got it. You know what's the new sunflower seeds coming out?
Taco Bell flavored.
Taco Bell flavored sunflower seeds.
When do those hit the market? Because I've been on those coming out for like a year.
Yeah, it says, well, it says this week.
Wow.
It's supposed to be hitting the shelves. Is prepared to call Big's new Taco Bell co-branded Taco Supreme Sunflower very much sunflower seeds that taste like Taco Bell.
Now, do you have to go to St. Albans to get this product, or is it available anywhere?
I think it's available anywhere, and there's a whole story on it, and I just thought Brady would be lined up right now. I'm surprised you're not at the Shaw's or something
like that. I am absolutely, absolutely going to get them right when they come out.
At 6:21 tonight, he will be in line.
I mean, your favorite sunflower seeds, along with your favorite Taco Bell.
Yeah.
I don't know what you can have. That's like peanut butter and chocolate. I don't know.
It's like scallops and mac and cheese.
I don't even know if it's that good, Rich, to be honest with you. All right, good job, guys. Excellent. I know it's always tough when I'm on remote, but good job that we got it done from Southern California while you guys were back in Southern Burlington.
Southern Burlington.
Yes, Southern Burlington. Brady, what's coming up on Champlain Valley
South
Game
South Colchester.
Kurt Heelan, Pro Basketball Talk's going to join us, and we do have to give a shout-out. Intern Nathan, his last day today, so good work for him.
Oh, I'm going to miss intern Nathan. He never got me Chinese food. So for intern Nathan, for Brady, for Rich, I'm Arnie. We'll be back tomorrow right here on 101.3 ESPN.
If it has to do with sports, we're talking about it. WCPV, Essex, Burlington, Plattsburgh, the sports station, 101.3 ESPN.